And now, you're tuned in to RBLR, the home of Tampa Bay's Reveler Sports.
This is the RBLR Rays Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Dodd, along with my co-host, Pat Davenport. Pat, what a couple of weeks of Rays baseball it has been.
Yeah, I think the only thing hotter than the Tampa Bay Rays right now has been the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland. Have you been hearing the discourse?
Yes,
do you have an opinion on the discourse?
Well,
because
okay.
Let me tell you how I feel, okay? Yes. Feelings don't care about the facts. And I am boiling alive in my own home right now. Okay, I don't care that in Texas it's 110 degrees Fahrenheit every day, right? It's 80 degrees Fahrenheit here in the UK, and we don't have AC, and we're not used to this kind of heat.
Well, and that's the one thing I will say, is that I think Americans are not used to what it is like when you do not have central heating and air. So I lived in a country before that also did not have central heating and air. And really, any temperature above like 80 or like even maybe like high 70s feels like 90, because there's no respite from it. Like even if it's 100 degrees outside, you can go inside basically wherever. And basically no matter where you go inside, it will be a minimum of 70 degrees pretty much anywhere. And you can go to your home and turn it to 66. Now, not everybody has, you know, the best central heating and air, but like it's basically universal in America. So that is the one thing I will say. Now, I would have less sympathy if you were saying, hey, I'm working outside, and comparing working outside in 78 degree heat to like working outside in 98 degree heat. Because while I do think England and the entire UK does probably have some gnarly humidity, so does the South. South has gnarly humidity as well. I do think that people are sleeping on just what it actually means on a day in, day out basis to not have central heating and air, which really matters really fast.
Yeah. And all the people on X that say, just get air conditioning, dummy, like get a window AC unit. One, it's not really part of the institution in the UK. Two, electricity costs way more in the UK. So to keep AC running, super expensive. And three, like, our houses could be built anywhere from 1980 to like 1750. And old houses in the UK have weird windows that often don't open at all, or like open in a really weird way where you can't fit AC onto a window.
Couldn't do a window AC unit.
So we just can't. We can't just be like buying it. And also, like, let's be honest, we're going to be hot for like 3 weeks, and then it's going to be really cold again, like normal. And is it worth buying a massive AC unit for 3 weeks? I don't know.
It's a good question. And honestly, that whole conversation right there is the most time that we have to not talk about Rays baseball, because frankly, this show is going to be jam packed, guys. You've come in to a absolutely massive show. The game is still going on, by the by. The Rays, I believe, have loaded the bases with nobody out. We're down 9-1, so it's not looking great. However, it is currently bases loaded, nobody out. Matt Tice is up, which would then get us one batter away from being top of the order again. So we're just going to keep an eye on that as we're going to talk about our jam-packed show. We're going to talk all the Rays winning over the past week. We're going to talk about what's going on with the sale of the team? Is that happening? Major players getting traded, roster churn. Is Taj Bradley a starter? We got so much to talk about, and we're so excited to talk about it with all of you. If you've got some opinions on anything we're about to talk about, please let us know over on YouTube in the comments, and we'd love to hear from you and talk about it with you. Pat, you were going to say something.
If we'll keep an eye on this game. We were down 8 runs coming into the bottom of the ninth. If somehow we make a game of this, like, it's going to be a special episode while we talk through everything else.
Yes. And it's been, and that would be fitting, because it's been a special week of Rays baseball, where it's really special 2 weeks of Rays baseball, because in the series that was, you know, the weekend series of a weekend ago, the Rays were sweeping what was considered by many at the time to be the best team in baseball. They are currently trying to sweep the best team in the American League, who probably has usurped the team we swept last weekend as the best team in baseball. And I think that would make us the best team in baseball, because even if we don't sweep them, we still beat them in a season, in a series. And that feels pretty awesome just to me.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, everyone was saying it was the Mets were the best team in baseball, and then the Rays came to town and put them on fraud watch because we swept them, and then they immediately went on to get swept again.
Yes.
So we just exposed the Mets for being a flawed baseball team. Mm-hmm. And now we pull up to the Tigers, and we have now exposed them to have cracks in their armor as well.
Indeed.
Taylor Walls has just hit a ground ball up the middle. Matt Tice flew out, but Taylor Walls has just drove in two runs. It's now 9-3, Tampa Bay. I mean, Detroit. But yeah, I mean, the Rays have been red hot. Honestly, we have to like constantly refer back to this day of May 20th, because that's the time everything turned around for the Rays, and they went on this absolute tear where before coming into today's game, we were 22-8. In our last 30 games. In a whole month, we have lost one series and we have lost back-to-back games once.
Yep.
Like, that is an insane run. And it's been, like, no matter who's turned up, good teams, bad teams, we've been there. And at the very least, we've either won or tied the series, except that weird Red Sox series.
Yeah, that was a weird series. Totally could have won the last game of that series. Really could have won either of the last two games of that series. Won the first game, which was one of the crazier games that we've had. We've pulled out a lot of crazy games this season. That was a crazy game. And then somehow we're not able to get a win out of those other two games. But we're both very winnable games. So you know we talked about this. I think. Maybe it was 2 or 3 weeks ago that we don't lose games by big margins. This game right here would be the first game in at least a month, maybe more, that we'd lost a game by more than 4 runs. And the game's not over. And, you know, Yandy's up now with, you know, one out and 2 men on. So we could still salvage that series or that streak, you know, very possible. But the team is in every single baseball game. And, you know, the fact that we're even still talking about the current Rays game right now is just an evidence of how good the offense has been. There's been so many games over the past 2 weeks where a pitcher has gone out, as good as our pitching has been, pitcher's gone out, given up a couple runs, and the offense has come right back and picked them up. And to me, that is, you know, that's the sign of a really good team, where even if what is supposed to be the strength of your team goes out there and doesn't perform to its best, the other aspects of the team can pick it up and still allow for winning baseball to be played. And that is what is going to allow this team to kind of get to the next level where they are currently ascending to, is that this is just a complete ball club, top to bottom.
Yeah. I guess the big question, I have two questions about this hot streak that I think we should try and answer. One, is this, oh man, Yandy just lined out to the first baseman. Runner got picked off on the base. Game over.
That's brutal.
Twice that's happened.
That's twice. It happened in the last inning. That's brutal.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the game, 9-3.
That's the game, 9-3.
But anyhow, the two questions I want to ask. One, is this real? Is this like an overperformance by the Rays? Is this a hot streak or is this who this team is? And why? And the second question is, if it isn't a hot streak and the team is now just on this level, what's changed from April?
Well, here's how I'm going to start to answer that question. Because one of the things that I think that we said from the beginning of the year was that in order for this team to get to where we wanted them to go, it was going to take guys like Yandy Diaz and Brandon Lau playing to their potential and playing to being what we know them to be. And it's going to take guys like Junior Caminero, Jonathan Aranda, and Curtis Meade stepping up to get us to that next level. So with that in mind, Curtis Meade, 434 WRC plus, Yandy Diaz, 277 WRC plus, Jonathan Aranda, 160, Brandon Lau, 157, Junior Caminero, 146. Those guys in that order are your leaders in WRC plus for the Rays over the last 2 weeks. These are the guys that we expected. If we were going out there and saying, wow, Matt Tice is like powering the offense or whatever, like you might be able to say this is a little bit, you know, fool's gold. And maybe the level of offense that we've been getting could come back down to earth at some point over the next you know, several months of baseball season, and they inevitably will go through a cold stretch offensively. But the guys that are performing at the highest level are the guys we said at the beginning of the year we needed to have good performances from in order for this team to do well. So to me, this is not necessarily the team overperforming. There is some overperformance baked in here, but I also would say it is more the guys that we expected and the guys that we knew going into the season would have to play well, playing to their potential and starting to become the players we knew. And, you know, nobody encapsulates that more, in my opinion, than Junior Caminero and what he has done. Oh, since that May 20th date, the numbers that he has put up, the power that he has provided, the dude is on pace for 100 RBIs, which is crazy.
And almost 40 home runs.
Almost 40 home runs, and he's 21.
Right. This is his first full year in the big leagues.
Yeah.
And he started the season hitting a lot of ground balls, and I think he still leads all of baseball in grounding into double plays.
Yep.
Which will happen if you hit a lot of ground balls and you hit the ball as hard as he does, right?
Yeah.
But I was like, oh, this might be a season with a lot of these while he figures some stuff out. Nope, it was like 6 weeks. And now he's figured it out.
Yeah.
And you can see he's playing with lots of confidence, and you can encapsulate that into the game even today when he was bringing his hands so close to his body, getting to pitches inside and elevating them and pulling them. Like, this is a guy that's locked in. And the thing is, he's too powerful to pitch him away because he's so good at hitting opposite field home runs. Right.
Yeah.
Yesterday he hit that one to right center where that was just pure power and bat speed that got that out. And then today he had a pitch that was coming in on his hands. Bam, his hands were in on it so quick. So he is locked in and he is seeing the ball and recognizing pitches quickly enough to whether it's inside, outside, up or down, he is getting to it. And because he swings the ball so hard, swings the bat so hard, it's always going to be solid contact. And if he can get slightly under it, that's all he's going to need to get it out. He doesn't even need to barrel it up because he's got that incredibly high outlier bat speed that creates such massive power. He doesn't need to barrel it to hit a home run.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing I would throw into that sort of question of whether this is real or not is the pitching performances. Over the past, in the last 2 weeks, I'm just kind of doing that because I think this is where the Rays have really hit a new level, even above, you know, the March 20, the data's in there and in this whole stretch. Mm-hmm. In the last 2 weeks, the Rays are ranked in the 18th to 20th range in team ERA, team FIP, walks given up. Mm-hmm. The pitching is, and we know, I think we would agree, that is substandard for them as a staff. And by the way, that's not including the numbers from today. These are numbers before today's game. So the numbers are going to go down based on today's game, which again, you know, today's game, we're going to talk about it too much, but the guy who is responsible for the blowout will not probably be on the roster in a playoff series. So nothing to be concerned about there. But the pitching has been good, not great. And that is not the identity of this team, really. Good, not great pitching is not the identity of this team. And so that leads me to believe then that somehow this team maybe even has another gear above this somehow. Like there's even another level above this. Cause when you look at the, you know, just the scores of the games for the last, you know, 2 weeks, you know, there's some games we gave up five runs.
We've been winning slugfests.
Yeah.
Which is not the Rays MO most of the time. We've been in a lot of slugfests.
Yes.
Lately, which is not the Rays MO at all. And, you know, the pitching staff is still successful. We're seventh in team ERA across the whole season.
Yes. Yeah.
We're still a top 10 pitching staff at worst. And you could argue we're better than that since May 20th, which is the, you know, the elite Rays. But it's been a weird one because like you said, is a pitching staff that is not what we come to expect from Rays pitching staffs. Now, I think they've made a change in their pitching philosophy in the past couple of years. They don't care as much about blow it by you, pure stuff, strikeout guys as much anymore. They care more about command guys and they care about getting ground balls.
Yeah.
That's what they care about. If you look at the guys they go out and target and actively went to go get, look at Zach Littell. Look at Drew Rasmussen. Look at, heck, last year and the year before, Zach Eflin. These are not blow it by you stuff, guys. These are soft contact, ground ball command oriented pitches. And the Rays are amongst the lowest walks per percentage, per nine, whatever you want to look at it, in the league. Yes. They don't walk guys. But they are, and they're getting a lot of ground balls, but their strikeout numbers are way down.
Yeah.
As a staff, as what you'd compare. So, yeah, it's a bit of a different, and also, like, Rays, when you think of the Rays, if you're a casual fan, you think of the Rays, you go, oh, openers, bullpen days, like, loads of pitching changes. Rays lead the league in starting pitcher innings.
Yep.
Lead all of baseball in starting pitcher innings.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very different Rays pitching setup than what we're used to, say, in the kind of early period of Rays success under Cash from like 2018-19 to like 2021, that kind of really successful period there. It's now a completely different approach here in 23 to 25.
Yeah. And, you know, the guys that we would consider as the stuff guys, the Ryan Pepios, the Shane Bosses, the Taj Bradleys, you know, Pepio's been great. Taj has been so-so and, you know, or excuse Boz me, Boz has, Boz has been so-so. And Taj is probably more in the, we're going to talk about him later. We'll just leave it at that for now. Or I guess we could, maybe we should talk about him now because, you know, when we're talking about the pitching staff and what has been maybe going wrong for it, Taj, unfortunately, kind of encapsulates a lot of what has gone wrong for the Rays pitching staff. Relatively speaking, he's walking a bunch of guys. He is giving up home runs, which, I mean, he's basically doing everything you do not want to see. He's not getting enough ground balls, not nearly enough ground balls. He's not leaving guys on base. Now, the one thing I will give him is that over this last, you know, these last 2 weeks have really been rough. He started two games and only has pitched 5 1/3 innings. In those two starts, not great. He is getting BABIPed a little bit, so I will give him that. But the sort of my like my tolerance to give you grace on your BABIP is directly proportional to how high your walk percentage is. And unfortunately, Taj is walking guys, so I don't feel as bad for you because you can survive a little BABIPing if there aren't guys getting on base for free, which is what has been happening. Taj. So I guess I'm going to put it to you, the question that's kind of been floating around on Rays Twitter and just sort of in general across, you know, the Rays fandom is what do we do about Taj? Is it time to try something else?
Right. So if you look at, I'm looking at his numbers since May 20th, because that's when the season started now. And yeah, it's not been pretty. A 5.22 ERA since then, which is crazy considering the success the team has had.
Yeah.
He's the only guy with an ERA above 5, and he is like one of three pitchers. He's the third lowest pitcher in WAR since that time that's pitched at least 5 innings. But his xFIP 3.5, which puts him in the upper end.
Yeah.
So you're right about the BABIP, but you're also right about the walks. And it's hard to say, let's stick with him when Joe Boyle is lighting up AAA in the way that he is.
Yeah.
Are you ready to, because I think the Rays are in a spot where they say, because this is the conundrum, right? We know what Taj is. We know that Taj is consistently inconsistent.
Yeah.
And every Taj start is, coin flip. You either get good Taj or you get bad Taj.
Yeah,
good Taj will give you 6 innings, 2 runs. Bad Taj will not get out of the third and give up 5 plus.
Yeah.
Now, are you ready to say, because let's be honest, if we're sending Taj down, Boyle's the guy.
Oh, 1,000,000%. Yeah.
But you've all. I think the Rays are also in a position where they want to say, if we're bringing Boyle up now, we want to keep him up.
Yeah, I think I would.
They want to send him up and down again for a spot start.
Well, so, and again, I think it's helpful or instructive, at least in these sort of conversations, to think about how Boyle got on the team, right? Boyle is here because Jeffrey Springs is not. So yes. That mindset, I agree with you. They brought up once for a spot start. That was a unique scenario. Probably they probably didn't even want to really do that. They just did it because that was the best plan for that scenario. I don't think they want to do the up and down because that's not really beneficial to him and his development. What you want is to get him consistency and to allow him to, you know, basically roll through and be on a consistent schedule so he can develop. And I am a type of guy personally where I like my prospects well done, not medium yes. rare, which is the opposite yeah. of how I like my steaks, but I like my prospects well done. I like them to have as much time as possible to you know, do what they need to do in the minors to get their things figured out. The issue is I think Boyle, he may not be well done, but he's certainly like medium.
Yeah, he's medium, I would
say. He's medium right now, if not well done. And so if there was a – and maybe there is. I actually don't know. Is there a Triple A Cy Young? I don't think there is.
There's like International League Pitcher of the Year.
Probably. If he pitches the way that he's pitching now through the rest of the season, he will win that award probably going away. He's pitching to, I believe, a sub 1.6 ERA right now in mm-hmm. AAA. He looks every bit the guy. He is the stuff guy. He's striking guys out at a high level. He's not walking that many guys, which is like the perfect, you know, what you want to see from a guy like him is keeping it in the strike zone, allowing his stuff to play in the zone and striking guys out. And, you know, the question I think, and this is what makes it so difficult, is then what do we do with Taj? Because yeah. I think in the last couple of starts, the way we have seen him, what we've seen him do, to me, I would like to see what Taj could do as the new Uceda, especially because Uceda's kind of not been pitching that well. Can we get him into a two-inning, leave it all out on the pitch or on the, I don't know why I said pitch, on the field role. Where he's just going max effort for two innings as opposed to trying to make it happen, you know, over six innings. I just feel like he has bulk reliever written all over him, but I think he would be a really good bulk reliever. So I guess my thing is if we're going to pull that ripcord and send him down and bring up Boyle, I think that the next step is to try out Taj as a multi-inning reliever. I don't know what his temperament for that is. I don't know if the Rays agree with me and view him that way. But the thing that has really concerned me about Taj is we were talking about this before we went live. I don't mind guys giving up home runs, and he's getting BABIPed a little bit. But the thing that really concerns me over his last couple of starts is that when he is losing it, he's losing it. He's not being able to get back in the zone. He looks flustered on there. He doesn't look in command. He just looks like he just looks unsettled up on the mound. That is not what a starting pitcher at the major league level needs to be looking like. It's just not good. And so either he needs to, in my opinion, go down to AAA and work on it if they want to keep him as a starter. But in my perfect world, we send him down. Boyle comes up, starts it instead of Taj, and then Taj is slowly moved into a multi-inning reliever role where I think he could kind of reach his peak value. Because I think we in this, especially in the Rays organization, back of the rotation starters, we've got them. We got all you want in back of the rotation starters. You know, we got Joe Rock, you know, we got Ian Seymour, who came up and pitched great, you know. We've got those guys. I'm not worried about back of the rotation starting pitching. We got plenty of it. What I think is in short supply is really, really good multi-inning relievers, because multi-inning relievers usually are considered the junkers. They just come in, eat innings when a game being blown out. But the value of a guy to be able to come in and get multiple innings at a high level when a starter maybe doesn't pitch so well to keep you in a game is so underrated on a pitching staff. And so that's what Uceda gave us last year, was he was able to come in and calm things down if a start wasn't going well, give you two innings, allow you to reset the staff a little bit, and then go through the rest of the game and still have a chance to win. If Taj can do that, especially as you say, it is kind of coming back to earth. And this wasn't intended to be a hammerhead when you say it a segment, but it's kind of become that. He's also not pitching very well over the last couple of weeks, although he's mostly gotten blown up in one or two outings and been pretty good in the other outings. But Taj has great stuff that I think would play really well in shorter outings when he wouldn't have to get into his full arsenal as much and allow him to just focus on the pitches that really work.
I can agree with that. I can totally agree with that. It's a bold decision, because I think the moment you do that, that's you saying not just we're taking a break from Taj. I think that's we are done with him as a starter. And when you look at stuff like his July, was it June last year? You go, oh, are we ready to pull the plug when he could get back to something like that?
Yeah.
It's a bold move, because I think, it also destroys his value if you want to move him on, potentially, to another team.
Yeah, that's true as well.
So it's a bold move to make. And I think that's why the Rays are waiting as long as they possibly can to make it.
I mean, his value is already pretty low right now, though. Like, if you tried to trade Taj Bradley right now, I don't feel like you would be able to get much value out of that.
I don't think a contender would want him. No, I don't think a contender would want him. But there could be a team that we might throw in a couple of lottery ticket types. I don't know. But you probably don't want to move him for that.
Yeah, because I think he still has a lot of value, and he's been in your organization a long time. You would like to keep a guy like that. And again, whenever we criticize guys, I've said this a lot, but whenever we criticize guys or when we talk about, you know, how we think the team should use them, it's always within the framework of this team we think is good enough to win a World Series or at least play for one. So Taj does not suck. He's not bad. He is a major league baseball pitcher. There's only a couple hundred of those, you know, that can do what he can do at that level. He's elite. However, when on the stage that we're discussing him at, he is not, you know, meeting the expectations of a team at this level. So no. The question is, do the Rays staff think that he just needs to work it out and he'll get back there? Or is it something where he needs to do something else developmentally? And the only reason that I'm pushing more hard for the latter is just the way he seemed on the mound. If he was just getting lit up and he was grinding it out and getting five innings out of it, I would not be speaking this way. But because of the way he's looked on the mound and his inability to pull it together, that is what's leading me down this road. Because I feel like we know what he is at this point in his career. I don't feel like there's not another gear he can get to. I just don't think there is.
I think there is, but it would require him learning a good third pitch.
Yeah.
Which he could go do in AAA.
Maybe that's the move. Maybe that's the conversation. It's Taj, we need you to go down to AAA for a little bit and rework your arsenal.
Yeah.
I could buy that. And maybe that's the way the Rays could spin it. To keep Taj in good spirits. Like, hey, look, your current arsenal is just not working. We need you to go down to AAA and work on it a little bit and come back up with it with a tweaked arsenal and see if that makes a difference.
Yeah, right. I think you're right though. Current Taj as he exists, I think we don't get much better than this. But if he could learn a third pitch that can play off his other two, because I think his fastball works and I think his splitter works, but the problem is when you're only two pitches, it's hard to be going for five, six innings.
Yeah.
With a two-pitch mix. So you need a third, really. So I guess we'll see. But I guess that leads us on to a guy that the Rays did mess with his pitching arsenal, and that is another acquisition we went and got made.
Mm-hmm.
Trading with the Houston Astros to get Forrest Whitley for cash considerations after he got DFA'd. And he got lit up pretty badly today, which is a bit annoying because he was on our schedule to be like, hey, Forrest Whitley came over and he's been pretty good. Yeah. But up until today, he was pretty good.
Yeah. Well, they clearly, when he came over, the clear message was throw your cutter more. And he threw his cutter a lot more and it was working really well. It was a rough outing today. It was also raining. And I don't know. I'm not going to read too much into that. It's a very bad outing. I don't know if they'll send him back down after that outing, but it seems like they've liked something about him. And frankly, we've got a couple of injuries on our, you know, pitching staff right now. We're still dealing with, which that's probably our next topic of conversation, unfortunately, because we've had some injuries to our relievers that is probably influencing having guys like him and Sulcer up. And so I still like him. I still think it's really interesting to see what the Rays are doing with his arsenal. He looked great in his other outings besides this one. So I'm still excited for him. I still am curious to see what he can do. I'm just going to write this outing off for now, unless we see more outings like it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, with relievers as well, it's going to just like destroy his ERA and like all that kind of stuff. It's probably irreparable this season because he was bad with the Astros. That's why they DFA'd him. Yeah. But like, this is just a broader question I have. I mean, he looks like he, I mean, the thing about Forrest Whitley is he is a stuffed demon. He throws really hard. He's a really tall guy. So gets good extension. Am I crazy? I was talking to my housemate about this. Everyone saw that the most effective pitch Forrest Whitley had was his cutter, and he threw it very little with the Astros. And then the Rays were like, your best pitch is your cutter, just throw a more dummy. Are we, as Rays fans, just too tuned into that kind of stuff where it appears obvious? Or like our front office is just dumb or what? Like what? I don't know. Like because the Astros aren't a dumb team. They develop pitching really well. So what, like, how come they didn't go, oh, the cutter actually works. Why don't we tell Forrest Whitley to throw his cutter more? And then the Rays just do it.
Well, so there's a couple of things. Number one, his cutter did get lit up a little bit today. So maybe, I think, one of the things that the Rays work on with guys is their location. And I think maybe that's what the Rays are working on with him. And I would say just from watching him in his previous outings compared to today, he was locating his cutter very well in his other outings that he pitched with us. And he just didn't locate it well today. He left one to Parker Meadows, literally like middle, and 88 miles an hour, and Parker Meadows annihilated it. So, maybe the Astros felt like he wasn't able to locate it very well. But I would say that I feel like that's the Rays' philosophy. I don't know enough about the philosophy of the Astros or other pitching, departments across baseball. But I do wonder if, the Rays' philosophy, I also think, I wonder how much pitchers appreciate that philosophy and how much that affects their performance. Because clearly, the Houston Astros were telling him to do something that he maybe wasn't a fan of or didn't feel like was his best stuff out there, but they were telling him, this is what you need to throw. Whereas the Rays are going to focus on what they determine your strengths are. And from talking to pitchers in the Rays organization, like we have, and just what we hear from other pitchers, they usually agree with the Rays and are on the same boat. And it's a good environment for them. So, I do think as Rays fans, because we're so deep into this, we talk so much about pitching because it's been our organization. We haven't had the elite MVP level hitters, that have been that for us to talk about in the great offenses. We've had some, but like really what has been our bread and butter and our talking points to our success has been our pitching staffs. So we definitely look at that more than maybe some other franchises. So maybe there's some truth there, but I think that the Rays pitching philosophy is just really good. And I wonder if other orgs just don't have the confidence in their evaluations to operate the same way, because saying just throw your stuff, kid, works when you evaluate players properly and you say, hey, this person has good stuff, because Rays just don't get anybody. They go get guys that they evaluate and determine to be worth, saying to them, throw your stuff, we believe in you, kid.
Yes.
Not every pitcher can do that. Some pitchers do have to be kind of managed a little bit, and they can't just throw whatever they want. You see this when pitchers, try to call their own game. Sometimes it doesn't go well. So the Rays, I think, just pick pitchers because their evaluation is just so good. They find pitchers that can benefit from their style of coaching and bring them in and throw them out there.
Yeah. I mean, agree with everything you just said. I think there is a lot of potential in Whitney because he has the stuff, and it won't be an overnight kind of transformation. I mean, recent projects of like stuff demons that like got off to rough starts and then became absolute monsters after a couple of weeks with the org. Robert Stevenson, Jake Diekman,
mm-hmm.
Aaron Loop, all those guys. So wait and see on Whitley. I think they're going to take their time and try and make those changes and see what happens.
Yeah, you say it was that way too. He was just kind of out of nowhere, and all of a sudden he was elite. Kevin Kelly, same thing. They picked him up in the Rule 5 draft, and look what he's become. So I'm excited for it. We'd be looking to see more from him. The other pitcher that was brought up recently, there's two pitchers that were brought up over the last 2 weeks since we last spoke. The first was Ian Seymour, who has been a prospect in the Rays system for a while now, got his chance to come up, ended up pitching in that wild Red Sox extra inning game where he went out and got two amazing innings, pitched phenomenal in the clutch, and was able to help us win that game. Great start from great outing from him. He got sent back down just because we've unfortunately had to use our bullpen a little bit over the past couple of weeks, partially because of some tough Taj starts that have forced us to use our bullpen more. So we kind of had to churn a little bit. And the other was Paul Gervais, who came up yesterday and had a very nice outing yesterday, getting us some extra innings. So it's been really, really cool to see some of these guys getting brought up in these sort of multiple inning opportunities and just kind of shoving.
Yeah, I am a big fan of Paul Gervais. I remember when we acquired him at the deadline last year when we just were like picking up loads of Mets AAA relievers. I don't know why we were doing that. We just like we decided that it was a bulk buy at the Mets minor league development. I just hope I never have to stand next to Paul Gervais for my own dignity, because that guy is 6'10".
Yeah,
6'10". I'm not going to reveal my height, just to, you know, not to just so I don't dwarf myself compared to Paul Gervais. But let's put it this way: it'll be like, you know, when Altuve stood next to Aaron Judge.
That's a great picture.
Who would be one of those? So if I ever do a Rays meet and greet, if like that ever gets organized, producer Eureka, please, can I not meet Paul Gervais?
Well, and I mean, and the height is it's kind of an anecdote, but it also feeds into what makes him so good, because he has elite extension, which, you know, it sounds like almost like too simple, but it's like, hey, if you release the ball closer to the plate, there's less time for the hitter to react to it. But it really like it makes a huge difference. And not all tall guys have elite extension. It's some, no. You know, and there are guys that are shorter that have better extension because of their motions.
Yeah, I mean, like, and it allowed, because his fastball is not like blow away. It's like 93, 94.
Yeah.
But again, it will feel like 96, 97. Because again, he releases it 7.6 feet closer.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So the stuff plays up. I really like him. I think he can do some really good stuff. Again, he's going to go up and down a couple times before he settles, I think.
Yeah. Well, and part of that is because the Rays have had some injuries to their pitching staff that has brought some of this on. The one that has been tough is there's been two, unfortunately, really tough ones. The first is because of the role this guy has played, Manuel Rodriguez. Right forearm strain, which sounds like Tommy John, but apparently it's not actually that bad, and they expect him to come back relatively soon. So hopefully nothing too bad there. And then a really, really unfortunate injury to Hunter Bickey during the game a couple nights ago. Really tough to watch. I was watching the game live, and tough. It really, really tough scene. Just caught a high exit velocity foul ball right to the neck, I believe. And it and thankfully their medical staff was able to get to him quickly, get him off the field. And he has since left the hospital, I believe, yesterday. So he is doing better, but no current timeline on when he'll be, available again.
It does seem like there's no like permanent damage that.
Yes.
I think it's going to be one of those where I think, you know, having a bruised and sore neck for a while, and that sucks. Like, we all know what that feels like. So that might take him a while to just get back into doing physical activity again, because he's going to have to be careful with his neck, a really important part of your body. And but I think it's more kind of shaken up than like injured, if that makes sense.
Yes. I think you're right about that.
I think he's lucky in that respect. Unlucky that he caught the foul ball, but lucky that it didn't hit it. Like if it was a couple of feet, like if it was a foot higher and caught him on the head, that could have been real, real bad. So I think all the prayers up to Hunter Biggie. Hope you get well soon. And I'm glad he's okay, relatively.
Yes. Yeah. So hopefully we continue to get good news on him. The other kind of transaction news over the past week or 2 weeks, really, Solser was up and down and then down again over the past week. Palacios is working on his rehab assignment in Durham. We're going to get to that in a little bit, kind of talking about some roster stuff. Also working back on his rehab assignment is Ha-Seong Kim. He was pulled off of it briefly. There was some concern there, but he seems to be okay. He's back on his assignment, started yesterday, I believe, and today. And should be playing some shortstop and, you know, is potentially, you know, we could potentially be seeing him in a Rays uniform next weekend. It's not super likely, but it's possible. And then Shane McClanahan had a pause in his throwing program due to some more nerve weirdness. But they were able to get that looked at. He still feels pretty good. He's continuing to throw. He's hopeful to start bullpens again soon. So still no real like huge change. We're still looking at end of July, early August for him.
Yeah. Yeah. Better to be safe than sorry with these big long rehabs. And we'll talk about some roster crunch in a minute, but I guess something that we should say that will never, like, you don't need to be cautious with them. You can throw them out there every day. It's a t-shirt from rblsports.com. I mean, what more could you possibly say? They have all the best merch for your Rowdies, your Lightning, your Bucks, your Rays, the Sun as well.
The
champions, the Tampa Bay Sun. They are, you could rep all of those teams, celebrate the championship win. And if you use the promo code Flappy, you get 10% off your order. Whatever is in it, 10% off code Flappy at rblsports.com. Did that feel weird that I was doing it?
It felt like so natural. It felt so perfect. And once you're done on shop.rblsports.com, you can head right on over to rblsports.com tomorrow for the roundtable, the best article in professional baseball. Every week, our guys and gals come together to put together a phenomenal piece every single week. You definitely want to be there. The RBLR roundtable at rblsports.com every Monday.
Yeah, they give you a bit of everything. They give you some prospect stuff, like down on the farm kind of stuff. They look at current Rays trends, observations, and kind of really keep you in the know with some really in-depth, short, analytical, like bite-sized pieces. And you can, you'll sound like the smartest Rays fan around if you just keep on top of the round table. I know I do.
Yeah. Absolutely. So do we want to dunk on the Red Sox or do we want to have uncomfortable stadium and team selling conversations?
Okay. They say the best way to do it is get the bad stuff out of the way first. But is this a bad thing, Zach?
That's a good question. I think that remains to be seen. So the news that has come out since we last spoke with you all is that the Rays have received a offer in principle from a group based out of Jacksonville to buy the Tampa Bay Rays from Stu Sternberg and the other minority owners of the team. There's not been an agreement reached, but the offer is out there and has been like tendered to Stu for approval.
And it's in advanced enough discussions. It's advanced enough that the Rays themselves put out a statement earlier in the week where they said, the Tampa Bay Rays announced that the team has recently commenced exclusive discussions with a group led by Patrick Zalupski, Bill Crosgrove, Ken Babby, and prominent Tampa Bay investors concerning a possible sale of the team. Neither the Rays nor the group will have further comment during the discussions. The reported price tag is a roughly $1.7 billion.
Which is right. Like that price is not like, I mean, obviously it would have to be for them to be discussing it, but like that's about right on a price point standpoint.
Yeah, because the thing is, like, the value of the Rays is about $1 billion, right? And you've got to pay over that really to convince the owner to sell.
Yeah, and the Rays probably would have been a $2 billion-plus franchise if the stadium situation had been worked out, but it hasn't been. So some of that value is lessened a little bit by the fact that there is no current – you have the trough. So I guess sort of indefinitely, you could keep kicking the can down the road if you wanted to forever, but there is no long-term stadium plan yet. And I, you know, I think the idea might be because and you know, this goes back to the conversations we had when the stadium situation kind of fell apart the last time we talked about it. There was a very like pointed statement by local leadership saying we will discuss this with the Rays, but not with Stuart Sternberg. And so I think, you know, maybe the story is Stu is like, all right, you know what? Then forget it. I'll sell the team and somebody else can deal with you guys. And maybe the you know, local leadership will be more willing to work with this ownership group out of Jacksonville, who is they are already involved in some other local sports teams in the area. So that does sort of lend itself to, you know, these guys do sort of know what they've been in this space a little bit before. Obviously, owning a major league baseball team is nowhere near the same level as owning a minor league team. But, I don't think it's all bad. You know, I initially was a little wary because they're Jacksonville based, but it seems like in all the sort of, you know, reporting or discussions that have come out, there's nothing's been said officially or anything, but it does seem like they're going to keep the team in Tampa. You know, there's not really like, this isn't a, we're going to buy it to move it to Jacksonville. It doesn't seem like that's the play. So no. I guess, you know, it looks okay. I do have one big reservation on it, but what are your thoughts?
Yeah, so I was a little surprised because I didn't think Stu was actually going to earnestly sell the team. Yeah. But it looks like this might come to something.
Yeah.
I would give it like maybe like 70, 75% odds
on
going through. Yeah. With Stu Sternberg, you can never say anything for sure. Mm-hmm. But the fact that it's got to the point where the team is putting out a statement means that they're really serious about this.
Yes.
Like, this is not kind of throwing stuff against the wall. This is like a serious discussion. And I think it would be for the long-term benefit of the team for them to have a new owner just for their long-term future in the Tampa Bay area and the kind of business side of things. I think I know what you're going to say in a minute about your concern, so I'll let you express that. But I think in terms of the business side and on the side of getting a stadium and the long-term future of the team in Tampa or St. Pete or wherever they end up landing a potential new stadium, I think it's important that they get a new owner because I think Sternberg has burned bridges with pretty much every kind of possible way out of this stadium mess. So they need to start afresh with new ownership. So I think it will be a positive, and it could also, the fact that it's a conglomerate usually means that they're a bit more flexible with their funds as well, which could mean greater investment in the team and facilities, which is great. But I think I know what you're going to say in terms of your concern. I'll let you, and I'm assuming this is a concern with the on-field Rays and how that's going to operate.
It is, and how it's going to operate is exactly the word, because whatever we can say or have said or will ever say about Stuart Sternberg, and we have done a lot of all of that, the guy has not gotten in the way of what Eric Neander and Kevin Cash are doing. He has let them cook as much as they have been able to with the salary limitations. He has let them do their thing and run the baseball team the way that they want to run it and they see fit to run it. Which, frankly, I think we can all agree, and I think, you know, really anybody who's watching baseball can agree, is the best run organization in baseball. Maybe only behind the Dodgers because they have an owner that wants to spend, right? Like, that's it. They are one of the best run teams, if not the best run team in all of baseball. So my only question is going to be, will this ownership group see that and say, cool, we're just going to let you keep doing your thing. Maybe we'll throw you a couple extra dollars. That's the dream. The dream is, hey, Eric, we're going to let you do exactly the same way you were going to do it. Here's an extra $200 million every year. Go have fun. That's the dream. That's the dream. What I think we could hope for realistically is, hey, Eric, here's an extra $80. That would be awesome. We'd love that. The fear is they come in and say, we want to do it our way. We're the owners. We're going to be the new Rays. We're going to do blah, blah, blah. And we're going to, you know, we're a clean house and set it all up from scratch. That would be a nightmare. And I think that the Rays could survive it because there's, you know, there's a lot of structure underneath Eric and Kevin that would still be able to survive some of that, but I would hate that. And I really hope that the ownership, if I strongly doubt this ownership group is watching this podcast, but if they are, do not rock the boat. What is working is working. Let it be, because this team is really, really good. If you want to throw some extra money at the team to get to maybe what you may perceive as the next level, or get one or two extra big free agents every year, that would be awesome. But please do not get rid of the best executive staff in Major League Baseball just to make a statement and a point about wanting to this be your team and your, you know, staff. That this this team does not need that.
I will. I don't know what I'll do. It will be horrible, whatever I do. If, like, this ownership group come in and go, Kevin Cash stares at spreadsheets too much. We need a guy that knows the game. Get Buck Showalter into it. Yeah, right. Or, like, they want to, like, do, like, an easy PR win, and they, like, get Joe Maddon back or something. Like, sure. That would enter us into some dark ages.
Well, but, and I do think one of the good things about this team is that they've been so good that you really can't justify it. Like, if the team got sold after last season, I would be very afraid, because last season didn't go super well. So you could maybe justify it. The way the team's playing right now, there's really no justification. And if they continue to play at the level they're playing with the players they've accumulated, especially if they add a couple of guys, like, there's no justification for moving on from the current team. On Kevin Cash just stares at spreadsheets. We kind of talked about it a little bit earlier in the episode about the change in pitching philosophy is almost become more old timey, like letting guys go longer. There's also been, in from a lineup perspective, you know, there's been some guys that have some, you know, we probably don't have time in this episode to get into it too much. There's been some guys that have better peripheral stats that if you were just looking at a spreadsheet, you might start them above some other guys. But clearly the team is running with a what's working is working. We're not going to rock the boat, which is kind of an old timey way of running a team. But it also fits with the Rays, you know, identity of being a strong clubhouse team. And they clearly value that and the clubhouse morale, and they're running it that way. So hopefully that would land well with this new ownership group. But frankly, this team is so good. It doesn't really make sense for them to clean house. My only concern would be, would they jettison at first sign of trouble type scenario, where first bad season?
So I guess, like, David Rubenstein bought the Orioles last year, right? And the Orioles went through a tough patch. He immediately was like, Brandon Hyde, you're out of here.
Exactly.
Whether that's a good move or not, whether that was the right move or not, is up for discussion. But, like, we all, when a new owner comes in and the team goes through a rough stretch, they immediately want to make their stamp.
Oh, yeah. 1,000,000%. And so that would be my only concern. And you know, this team is built on a lot of players that have injury concerns, and there are some streaky players on this team. So it's not impossible for that to happen. But I think, thankfully, this team, you know, and there's enough floor built into this team that that's not a concern, at least for this season. But it is, that's my main concern, I guess, if we do get a new ownership group, because Stu has basically proved that he's not that guy. He's kind of a set it and forget it owner.
Yeah.
Which honestly is the best kind of owner to have in sports.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just wish, like, he did all the other things an owner is supposed to do.
Yeah. Hey, we could be owned by John Henry. So I think I'm going to take, I think as much as, you know, we dislike Stu, I'm going to take it. I'm going to take the W on that one.
I mean, I have two visions of John Henry. One is a Rays fan who views him as a bad owner of the Red Sox. But I also am a Man United fan and see him as a good owner of Liverpool.
See, this is why I'm so excited to talk about Devers with you, because you specifically have a perspective on this from seeing the both sides of him. So let's talk. We'll do it quickly, but let's talk quickly about Rafael Devers. Gets traded to San Francisco. It's a nightmare in Boston. They trade their franchise basically to, you know, a crossover into the National League for what on the surface looks like peanuts. It's not really. There's a lot of value in what they got back, but thoughts, opinions, and what's the angle on the owner?
Okay, so in terms of ownership, I don't think this is an ownership beat. I think this is a GM and managerial decision that the Red Sox have made. I don't think this came from John Henry at all. I think obviously John Henry would have had to have signed off on this kind of move, but I think the idea came from Breslow. So obviously the situation is that Devers thought he was the third baseman. Chaim Bloom, when he signed him to an extension, told him, you're going to be the third baseman for this contract. And then the Red Sox continued the trend that they've had for a while now of having set people at a position that are kind of fan favorites and then signing a big name free agent at the same position. Because they forced Bogarts out the door when they signed Story.
Right.
And because everyone was like, the Red Sox don't need a shortstop. Why are they signing another one? They're like, oh, he'll play second. He never played second. He became a shortstop almost immediately. Then they signed Alex Bregman, where they got Rafi Devers at third base. Don't worry, Alex Bregman will play second. Dear listener, Alex Bregman never played a game at second base. He played all the games at third base. So, like, I don't know why the Red Sox keep doing this, right? Who's their best player now? Jaron Duran?
I guess.
So if their best position player is Jaron Duran, they'll sign a left fielder this coming off season,
right?
And say he'll play second base. Kyle
Tucker to the Red Sox. You heard it here first.
Kyle Tucker to the Red Sox. They'll say he's playing second base.
Yes.
Rafi Devers was under the assumption he played second base. Cora looked for 2 seconds in spring training, said, oh, Bregman can field. Devers isn't that good of a fielder. Bregman can actually play the hot corner. Let's play Bregman. My best lineup would have Devers at DH and Bregman at third base for defensive value. And then, yeah, we all know the story from there. Devers crashed out and then eventually begrudgingly took DH, but then Casas got injured. And they said, hey, Devers, could you maybe play first base while Casas is injured? He said, no, you wanted me to DH. Let me DH in peace. And then Bregman's now hurt, and they're like, Devers, can you go back to third base now? And Devers is like, no, let me DH in peace. I'm done talking about positions anymore. Now, he continued to mash through all of this.
Yes.
But I think what has happened is, one, Breslow did not communicate with Devers well enough. Cora did not communicate with Devers well enough. And Devers let his ego kind of crash out a little bit. I don't think anyone's in the right. But I also think Cora's handled it badly, because I think managers nowadays, I've said this on the podcast already, managers' role nowadays is to manage the people, not manage the game.
Yeah.
I think that's more important now. That managers don't manage the game, they manage the people. Cora has done a horrific job of managing the people, or in this case, the person in Rafael Devers. Because he's let his ego get out of control and made him disgruntled enough. And I think the only way this trade has happened, and this is speculation, but I think the only way this trade has happened is that Devers is becoming a headache to both the front office, but also to Alex Cora.
Yeah.
Where they both said, listen, this guy's a really good player, but I think he's becoming too much of a headache that we need to be done with it. Like, while the Red Sox are playing all right at the moment, like they're starting to get into a good run of form, it's clear that they're like, we'd rather just get this guy out of the clubhouse. Like, when we'd rather this guy was out than we were winning, which is only testament to how much of a headache he's been.
Yeah. And it makes me wonder too, if like with Casas being injured, with Bregman being injured, if they were just like, if this is not going to work long-term, let's just do it now, because it's not. Yeah. And I mean, obviously the ideal scenario for the Red Sox is that their ownership, or excuse me, their management and GM does not alienate their best player. But from where they were, you know, it kind of didn't, there wasn't really a good scenario for anybody. So what they got back in return was a bunch of pitching and Jonathan Tibbs. I think I may have misspoken his first name. But Tibbs is James Tibbs, excuse me, who was a college guy, played at FSU, 12th pick in the draft. is highly regarded and a lottery ticket pitcher in Jose Bayo, along with Kyle Harrison, who they immediately sent down to the minors, which is interesting, and Jordan Hicks, who was a really good reliever with the Cardinals, then became a starter with the Giants and was not very good. So they got a lot of, you know, sort of back into the rotation pitching value and hopefully a 3 to 4 outfield guy in Tibbs. Hopefully more, I think, for them, but more realistically, probably a 3 or 4 guy for them. And they got all that in return for the best player on their team.
Yeah, and probably the best hitter that will get traded this season.
Oh, most definitely. I would be shocked. Unless, for some reason, I can't even think of anybody who would get traded this
better. So the Giants got the best bat that could possibly be traded this season. They've got to hold on to Devers for 8 more years now. Which will be fine for the next few, but you'll become an aging DH in the back end of that deal.
Yeah.
But this is a win now move. This is a win now. And you know, the Red Sox have got zero sure things in that return.
Yes.
Right. Like Hicks has upside. We're not sure if he's going to get it. Harrison has upside. He's not showing it yet. Tibbs has upside, where he's so low down in the minors that we're not sure. Like Bayo, upside again in rookie ball, like in the complex league. So like, this could be a complete wash for the Red Sox. Like the Betts trade was. It's rough for them.
Yeah.
But they've got roster and payroll flexibility. Everyone's kind of excited about that they'll have $30 million on the books to spend if they want it. But essentially, they're going to buy Kyle Tucker. Yeah, that's what they're going to do. You know what? Come back here when they do that.
That would be so funny.
I'm glad the Red Sox have got a bit worse. But honestly, like they're still playing all right. And my housemate is a Red Sox fan, and he's saying that the players don't seem to care that much that he's gone. So like,
that's tough.
It's clear he was being a headache, right?
Yeah.
And I was saying this to him. I think it's just crazy that like Devers shouldn't be so obtuse that he sees like a player gets injured and like goes, "Well, you said I'm doing this." He doesn't like realize that significant injuries can cause plans and like changes in roles to happen.
Yeah.
I think that's really obtuse and like bad. Like it's so the opposite of what every player in every interview ever says, they all go, "Well, I'll do whatever it takes to help the team win. I'll play anywhere. I'll pitch if it helps the team win." Devers is like, "No, I'm DHing. Leave me alone."
which is hilarious.
Like, for a team sport is kind of like a crazy position to be in, where he's like, "I do not want to help the team more. I want to sit in the batter's box and hit, and that's it.
That's all I want to do."
So it's always fun to watch a division rival be a bit of a mess. So great, love it.
Great. 30 seconds or less, guys who are not a mess over the last 2 weeks, bat and arm of the week. Pat, who's your bat of the week?
This is not just this week, but this is like we talked about him earlier. My
choice
for this week, but also since May 20th, Junior Caminero. Monster. He's openly expressed interest in the home run derby. MLB, do the right thing. Get him there.
Yes, please. My bat of the week is going to a guy that didn't have the best year last year, needed him to bounce back. It's Yandy Diaz. He has bounced back, hit 4 home runs over the last 2 weeks, hitting to a 277 WRC plus. If the team is going to get where we want them to go long term, Yandy is the guy that we need to be playing at this level. He is. Super excited to have him back playing where he you know, we expect him to play. Yandy Diaz is my bat of the week. Pat, who is our joint arm of the week?
It's Ryan Pepiot. We're seeing the upside of Ryan Pepiot right now. Started off a little bit shaky to begin the year. Since May 20th, Leeds Rays pitching in WAR has a 1.64 ERA since May 20th, averaging over 10 strikeouts per 9. He has been an absolute monster lately and is making the Tyler Glasnow trade look really good. And we've still got Johnny DeLuca to come back as well to add to that value, hopefully, as well. So, yeah, Ryan Pepiot, he's awesome. We're seeing kind of what we hoped when we acquired him and more.
Yep. He's getting deep into games. He's not walking guys, striking guys out.
Yeah. What more can you
really do? Simple. Just do more of that. If everybody would just do that, pitch more innings, strike more guys out, and walk less guys, we would be the best team ever. I mean, it's just that simple. I don't know why more guys don't try that.
Last note is that, interestingly, the Rays have a lot of road games coming up. Between now and the All-Star break, we are playing, hold on, let me get this right. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 16 road games to 3 home games between now. And so 16 of our next 19 are on the road, starting this coming week with the Royals and the Orioles, which sound really similar when you say them next to each other.
They do. However, the Royals have Jack Caglione. I'm very excited to watch those games. So excited about that. Very, very excited. He gets to see if he's hit some home runs finally. I really hope that what I want to happen is for the Rays to demolish the Royals in all 3 of those games, to the point where when Jock hits a couple home runs, it doesn't matter. That's the goal. This series. I want to see Cole Sulcer in the game late so Jock can hit home runs off. That's the point.
Yeah. The Royals started off good and looked like they were in the playoff hunt and have kind of cooled down lately. So hopefully we can continue to nab them while they're on a cold streak. Orioles, they played us tough we dominated them. They dominated us. We dominated them. They dominated us when we played them for 4 at Steinbrenner. And then we're going to have them for 3 over next weekend. The Friday night game is on Apple TV. Apologies. I know. And yeah, so when we talk then, we'll have those series in the book. But hopefully the Rays continue to be on the kind of tear that they're on. Unfortunately, we dropped a game to the Yankees just today. So we're 2.5 back of the division. But, you know, by the time we talk next week, we could be, you know, closer than that. We could have overtaken the division by then. The Yankees are cold, so.
Objects in mirror are closer than they appear.
I can't believe we're in standings watch in June, but here we are.
It's exciting times. It's exciting times to be a Rays fan, and we're really glad that all of you are joining us on that journey, watching this team kill it every single, it seems like every single series now. The next gear that we were hoping and praying they would find last year, they are fully stepping on it right now. And it's just so much fun to watch. And there's no reason to believe anything different is going to be happening. So we're super excited for that. We're super excited to have all of you joining us. If you want to show us some support, if you're enjoying the show, enjoying our coverage of the team, you can do us a huge favor and drop us a subscribe, a like, a follow, wherever you enjoy us the most. It would help us out so much. And we hope that you will join us through the rest of this exciting season. But for now, and always, raise up.
Raise up.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLI Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.